It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Ladies and gentlemen, the UN, begun as a moral force, has become a moral farce. So when it comes to Israel at the UN, you'd probably think, nothing will ever change, right? Well, think again. You see, everything will change, and a lot sooner than you think. The change will happen in this hall, because back home, your governments are rapidly changing their attitudes towards Israel. And sooner or later, that's going to change the way you vote on Israel at the UN.
That was Benjamin Netanyahu speaking to the UN General Assembly just last week. And, you know, I think we've always enjoyed Benjamin Netanyahu because he speaks so plainly. And I think that's why Americans are responding to Donald Trump. I think they're sick of this diplomatic language where we think that the possibility of, you know, fill in the blank, you know, just put on the voice and not really say anything. He speaks with passion. He spoke again before the UN Assembly, you know, pleading with them about the anti-Semitism really that has overtaken the UN. This is Sandy Rios in the morning, by the way. And the reason I played that verse is because Benjamin Netanyahu met with both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump just over the weekend. I think he was very determined, as they should, the Israeli government to spend equal time with each candidate, not to come down on the side. They're such an important ally of ours. They're so tiny, and yet they're so important to us, certainly in the Middle East. So my understanding is that Donald Trump assured them that he would be all in favor and would support a proposal to make Jerusalem the capital of Israel, and Mrs. Clinton primarily talked to him about the, I don't think I even mentioned this on the air, but last week the president decided to give lots of money to Israel for their defense. And it's very controversial. Some of my Jewish friends feel it's controversial, but I don't want to get sidetracked right now. Nevertheless, that's what they talked about, and it's probably good news for Israel, for sure. And so that happened, and that's a big deal. Well, yes, I know there's a debate tonight. I do. I haven't forgotten. And by the way, I'm going to be hosting Washington Watch tonight, which is at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, for those of you filling in for Tony Perkins. And we'll be talking all about the debate, and I'll have some great guests. And so I just want to tell you that. But you're expecting 100 million people to watch this debate. And could I say, I was out in Northern Virginia on Saturday going from door to door, trying to encourage people to go out and vote. And I did hear from not more than one person that they were going to watch the debate before they decided. So there is a lot riding on tonight's debate, and I'm sure you're going to watch it too, right? And as a matter of fact, tomorrow we'll open the phone lines and just talk, because I will be very eager to know what you thought. And of course, through the years, you know, the decades, there have been so many famous debates in American history. The Stephen Douglas, Abraham Lincoln debates are some of my favorite, but we don't have any recordings of those. But we do have, there was a little montage on Fox this morning that I really caught my eye. And this goes back, you know, a couple of decades. You'll hear Ronald Reagan's voice, you'll hear George W. Bush's voice, and a few others. But it's kind of, well, it's amusing. It shows you some of the big events, not necessarily important in content, but in some cases, they actually swayed the election between two candidates. Let's listen.
Governor Reagan, again, typically, is against such a proposal.
Governor, there you go again.
But can you get things done?
And I believe I can.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You know, the Cold War's been over for 20 years.
Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
All right, so some of those things you recognize. You remember the one you couldn't see, but that's when Al Gore, you know, left his podium and we came across to sort of try to intimidate George W. Bush, and it didn't work. It really was a quite a funny moment. And I'm sure we're going to have moments like that tonight. And that, ironically, that's what people remember. It isn't the content so much as it is the way people present themselves. It's the impression. That's the nature of television. Television is not like talk radio. Talk radio is a medium of the ears and the intellect. You think about ideas, but when it's television, you see images. And it's the images and the impressions that are more powerful than even the words. You can look great and sound terrible on television and still win the debate. That's just the way it is. You know, of course you know, the obvious illustration was in the Kennedy-Nixon debates when it was the first televised American debate of 1960, I believe it was, I'm sure it was. And the people that listened to the debate on the radio thought that Richard Nixon had won. The people that watched it on television thought John F. Kennedy had won. John F. Kennedy was a great-looking guy with a great smile, and Nixon was kind of uptight, and he was very serious, you know. But on radio, and in terms of ideas, he had them, and he had, you know, so that's the way it is. And so tonight, it's television, and not everyone, maybe Abraham Lincoln would never have been president if it had been television, because, you know, he was so self-deprecating. And anyway, Stephen Douglas had much more bravado, so it might have been Stephen Douglas instead of Abraham Lincoln, but I digress. I thought Bill Hemmer did a really good job this morning on Fox of taking us back through this election cycle. First, he focuses on Donald Trump, and then he focuses on Hillary Clinton. Let's listen.
He was the political outsider, bounding on stage 13 months ago in a performance that was far from conventional.
Our leaders are stupid. Our politicians are stupid. That's what's happening, whether you like it or not.
Nearly 25 million Americans watched as a new political fire was lit.
Our country is out of control. People are pouring across the southern border. I will build a wall. It'll be a great wall.
Donald Trump took his in-your-face style and then vanquished, one by one, all 16 Republican opponents.
Don't worry about it, Don't worry about it, little Marco.
I'm at 42 and you're at 3, so far I'm doing better. Doesn't you started off over here, Jeff. You're moving over further and further. Pretty soon you're going to be off the end.
Like, you're the lion guy up here.
I've given my answer, Lion Ted. I've given my answer.
When the debate season was over, the New York billionaire proved he was a tough target to hit on stage. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton still had work to do.
Let's go forward. Let's win the nomination. And in July, let's return as a unified party.
Bernie Sanders would not go away easily. Some believe, though, he was doomed the night he declared this.
The American people are sick and tired of hearing about getting emails.
But Clinton showed in those lesser watch debates that she could go head-to-head with anyone. Remember this 8 years ago?
I was fighting against those ideas when you were practicing law and representing your contributor, Resco, in his slum landlord business in inner city Chicago.
Eventually, Sanders, running out of time and needing delegates, would concede.
I move that Hillary Clinton be selected as the nominee of the Democratic Party.
And now, two giant figures will be on stage together. Who will get the better in round one? It's the kind of contest that is only made in America.
All right, that was Bill Hemmer on Fox. I thought that was great. I wanted you to hear it. It sounds like a wrestling match, doesn't it? Or a boxing match or an NFL game. I'm not sure, but it is huge, as Donald Trump would say. There's no question about it. And I would say, to expand on, if you were listening to the news at the top of the show, I made the statement that I stand by. You know, Mrs. Clinton, if she is in good health, is a formidable opponent. I just have to say, she knows her information. She's crafty. She's not constrained by truth. And so it's hard, boy, when you try to debate someone who is not committed to actually speaking the truth. Now, Donald Trump's, you know, strength, whether you like it or not, is that he's a brawler. And she's not. So it just, you know, who's going to prevail? We really don't know. If Mrs. Clinton if her health is not good, her thinking is not clear, you know, I think he will devastate her. But if she's on her game, she could devastate him. So we'll see. You know, we will soon see. And certainly we know it's not a game. So much rides on what happens tonight. Let me tell you a couple of things. Well, let me just do it by playing this. Mrs. Clinton last week, you may not have heard this, but this was an odd moment. But it had to do with how she's doing in the polls. Let's listen.
I will fight back against so-called right to work. Right to work is wrong for workers and wrong for America. Now, having said all this, why aren't I 50 points ahead, you might ask? Well, the choice for working families has never been clearer. I need your help to get Donald Trump's record out to everybody. Nobody should be fooled. He proudly declared himself.
That's all right. I'm going to interrupt. But the point is, you know, she's talking about why am I not 50 points ahead? Well, she isn't 50 points ahead. Let me give you a little bit of a rundown of the polls this morning. In the Electoral College, which is really what finally determines, it's not the popular vote, it's 198 electoral votes for Clinton and Kaine so far. 175 are toss-up, and for Trump and Pence, it's 165. So 198 to the column of Clinton-Kaine, 165 to the column of Trump and Pence, with 175 in the balance. And this morning, I'm reading that, you remember that Mrs. Clinton and her team left Colorado and pulled out advertising and everything just, I believe, in August because they thought they were so far ahead they didn't need to do anything. But now it's sort of changed. The Quinnipiac poll is showing that Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are tied at 47% in a head-on-head race in Colorado. Now, of course, this is Weekly Standard reporting that this morning, but Emerson College poll found Trump leading Clinton by 4 points last week, but a PBS poll shows that Clinton is up 9 points. So you can see, you know, we just don't know. We really don't know. And we don't know because of the prejudices of the pollsters. However, we do know, we can be sure that the race is tightening. And in Pennsylvania, blue Pennsylvania, Mrs. Clinton now leads just by 3 points. Now, that is stunning. It really is. Because Pennsylvania is a very blue state. Now, the Rear Clear average, politics average of polling, Mrs. Clinton leads Donald Trump by nearly 6 points. 46 to 48.8. That's the average of polling in the state of Pennsylvania. But it's this one poll that shows now that the difference between them is just 3 points. I know it's confusing, but as I said, you can't really get in the weeds and rely on these numbers, except that you can know that the race is tightening. It's also tightening in Ohio. Donald Trump is in the lead in Ohio, but I think it's only one percentage point. And so that's not safe enough. You know, if he were to prevail over Mrs. Clinton, he's going to have to win by 5 or 6 points. Because otherwise, I do believe that the machine of the left will come in and steal votes. That's what I think they will do. And so the margin of victory has to be substantial or he will never pull this off. Let's see, do I have time to do this? Oh, no, I don't, unless we delay just a little bit. There was an opening of a big museum that we've watched it, you know, put together for many, many months here. It's the National Museum of African American History and Culture. It was opened, the grand opening was on Saturday, and of course, anyone who is anyone in the black community went. And George W. Bush and his wife Laura were there, and I want you to hear before we take this break. Oh, there it is. I was going to delay. Yeah, hold the break, please, because I want them to, before we go to our next guest, George W. Bush, in listening to this little clip, it made me remember and miss him. So let's hear what he has to say, then we'll go to break.
I was honored to sign the bill authorizing the construction of this national treasure. And I'm pleased it now stands where it has always belonged, on the National Mall. This museum is an important addition to our country for many reasons. Here are three. First, it shows our commitment to truth. Great Nation does not hide its history. It faces its flaws and corrects them. This museum tells the truth that a country founded on the promise of liberty held millions in chains, that the price of our union was America's original sin. From the beginning, some spoke the truth. John Adams, who called slavery an evil of colossal magnitude. Their voices were not heeded. and often not heard. But they were always known to a power greater than any on earth, one who loves his children and meant them to be free. Second, this museum shows America's capacity to change. For centuries, slavery and segregation seemed permanent parts of our national life, but not to Nat Turner, Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, Rosa Parks, or Martin Luther King Jr. All answered cruelty with courage and hope. Because of their contributions and the contributions of millions of African Americans, no telling of American history is neither complete nor accurate without acknowledging them. The lesson of this museum is that all Americans share a past and a future. By staying true to our principles, righting injustice, and encouraging the empowerment of all, we will be an even greater nation for generations to come. I congratulate all those who played a role in creating this wonderful museum. May God bless us all.
All right, that was George W. Bush at the opening of the National Museum of African American History and Culture in downtown D.C. You will see it when you come. You cannot miss it. It's right on the mall. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go to North Carolina and talk about what's happening there. Sadie Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
American Family Radio is for your family.
This is Joel, Louisville, Mississippi. I want to tell you that I had a remarkable experience one time driving up from Louisiana, and I'd gotten to about Belzona where I could pick up American Family Radio. I had just been through some turmoil with my dad, and where some old hurts came back to the surface. And you played that song from Big Daddy Reeves about Redeemed. And I was so touched and blessed by that. And I want to let you know how much blessing many times going to work in the mornings and just glorifying God and worshiping Him just gives me that little boost through the day that helps me get through what I have to face. So I'm very thankful for AFR.
Help us touch even more lives during our three-day share-a-thon starting October 18th.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for a career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. The military removed a Bible from the waiting room of a medical clinic at Eglin Air Force Base. The Air Force was afraid the Bible might offend someone. A Bible. On a table. In a waiting room. The Military Religious Freedom Foundation filed the original complaint. Those are the folks attempting to eradicate public displays of the Christian faith in the military. They said the presence of God's Word amounted to a violation of the Constitution. People Magazine and Good Housekeeping are just fine. The Good Book is not. An investigation was commenced and then concluded, and the Bible was moved to the hospital's chapel. Just another example of the war on religious liberty and the capitulation of military leadership. So let's say that you're in that waiting room, cardiac arrest. Would you find more comfort in a passage from the Bible? or the latest dirt on the Brangelina breakup. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Liberty remains the custodial, the functional custodian of the evidence. Therefore, I do have the authority to release. And now that it won't impact the investigation, we're going to do just that. It is also my understanding that the release at this point is appropriate not to taint the fact-finding mission that the SBI has been conducting over the last 2 days. I believe it's in the community's best interest, obviously. I felt that way Thursday, and I definitely feel that way today. But what we're releasing are the objective facts. What we're giving you is the most complete puzzle that we can without trying the case out in public. And I commit it to you, to everybody, that I would not do that. And I'm going to do that as well. I'm going to stick to it. And it's a complex case. All of them are. It's an Austin Barnes shooting. It's a tragic loss of life. And what I can tell you is there's no single piece of evidence that proves all the complexities involved in this investigative process relative to this case. As I said, it's a tragic incident. We as a community have some work to do. I know there's some distrust. We've been working on that diligently for quite a while now. But obviously there's more work to be done.
All right, that was the chief of police from Charlotte, Kerr Putney. Can you imagine how tired everyone in Charlotte is? Just weary. I don't mean sleepy. I just mean weary of the trouble. It sounds as though the protesters have become more peaceful. They've been demanding the release of these video, and that's why Kerr Putney gave them over the weekend the release of the dash cam and body camera. You can see it, and it's pretty dramatic, and you can hear them shouting at Keith Lamont Scott, "Please put down the gun, put down the gun," I think 11 times at least. And even though you can't see that he has a gun, the police chief says you will see evidence that he does have the gun. There's a picture of it. It evidently has his fingerprints on it. And, of course, one of the big issues here is that it was a black officer who shot Keith Lamont Scott. So it isn't a race issue. It never was a race issue. But, of course, the race baiters of the country want to make it that and want to destroy. And also, certainly not the rank-and-file people in Charlotte, I don't think they're thinking about this, but the people that stir this kind of strife up, have an election in mind. And so I was curious this morning about how this is affecting, you know, North Carolina has been going through a turmoil since they passed their law designating that people must use the bathroom that comports with their birth certificate. That's been hugely controversial. They lost all kinds of tournaments. They've lost millions of dollars. They received tremendous criticism. And ironically, that whole thing came out of a proposal by the mayor of Charlotte, which is where all this rioting has been taking place. I've asked Robin Hayes to join us this morning. Robin is the chairman of the Republican chairman in North Carolina, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, Robin. Good morning, Robin. All right. Well, we'll call him right back. The videos you can't see specifically. Robin, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Go ahead.
Actually, this is Patrick Poole.
Okay, Patrick. We've had a mix-up. Patrick, can I call you back in about 15 minutes?
Sure can.
We just started down the path of North Carolina, so I'm not sure how we got this switch, but I think we did. So we'll call you back. Thank you, Patrick. Okay, so Robin Hayes is the – we'll call Robin and we'll get this thing worked out. But I want to talk to him about – one thing I wanted to tell you over the weekend, just a couple of things. You know, there were some further demonstrations about what was – at these football games. I don't know what happened at the Bears-Dallas game yesterday. Maybe someone can tell me that. I really don't know what happened at the live NFL games yesterday. I know that outside of the stadium in Charlotte, there were demonstrations. I also know that Colin Kaepernick has now taken his protest to local high schools. Mr. Cops Are Pigs, Colin, you know, the hero football player, the hero who's started all of these refusals to stand for the national anthem, who wears on his socks Cops Are Pigs. I just think that's the part of the story that keeps being left out, and I think it needs to be repeated. You know, he's having some success. The amazing blending of anger over policemen and anger over shooting black men in the streets, which, listen, if I were a black American and all I knew was what Black Lives Matter was saying or Colin Kaepernick, I'd be out there protesting too. Even as a white American, if I would be out there protesting if I believed what they said was true. All right. So what effect is this having on North Carolina? We know that they've lost millions of dollars already in revenue, but Robin Hayes. Now, Robin, I already introduced you, but we had a mix-up, and so you weren't there. So now you're there. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm used to changing things on, turning on a dime, so I'm glad to be with you.
Well, I'm glad you're with me, too, and I appreciate you turning on that dime. All right, so, Robin, my understanding is that things got more peaceful yesterday, and that now that the protests are at least remaining peaceful. So, but I want to talk to you about the political considerations of this. Now, when we say this, I get a little annoyed because people in Washington make everything political. But because this is a presidential year, and because we know that many of the people stirring the pot on the race issue, especially with police, have politics in mind, they just do. Not the rank-and-file people in the black community in Charlotte, but the people that are organizing and coming in are trying to cause trouble because they want a certain outcome in the election. So my question is, how do you think this issue in Charlotte, is there any way to know or to tell how this is affecting certainly black voters in North Carolina?
It's a little hard to tell now. It obviously is being done for specific reasons by outsiders. What bothers me is internally, this situation needs to be handled by our local citizens. And to some extent, that's happening. But to others, that's what really makes me nervous about all this. Supporting our men and women in law enforcement and the military when the National Guard's involved is absolutely crucial. And this continued pressure from the outside to release bits and pieces of evidence, i.e. the videos, is very disturbing because it's a complex picture, presents at best an inaccurate picture, and then again it keeps the whole thing going. That's kind of where we are now. We'll work through it, and I say we, I'm 20 miles away, but have very much connection to that area. Outside needs to stay away. Federal government has no business intervening based on their record of causing rather than solving problems in the past.
Robin, you've had a big descent of outsiders. As I understand, not a small percentage of the protesters were from outside places descending on Charlotte. Do you know anything about that?
I do not know the figures, the numbers. I wish I did, so I'm a little reluctant to speak directly to that, although I do know there are outside influences from a number of different directions. I guess I just better leave it at that.
Yeah, well, that they do that everywhere. I mean, this is the pattern, and so
exactly.
Why would it be any different? And then the Justice Department rushes in to, you know, to try to take control of the local police departments, which I'm sure is no doubt happening in Charlotte even as we speak. That's what they've been doing in every single city. But
what bothers me about the Justice Department is this is the same Justice Department in the Obama administration that put Denise D'Souza in jail for telling the truth about Hillary Clinton in the movie Hillary's America. Yes, there was a minor campaign finance problem, but there's never in history been anyone given active jail time. This was punitive by the Obama administration. That is really scary, because that attitude carries over into the situation that you're talking about by inserting the Justice Department into Charlotte and North Carolina's political arena.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because I was just reading this morning the producer of that video on Islam and on Muhammad, who allegedly caused Benghazi, which is a complete lie, is now a homeless man. He's been totally destroyed. He was arrested. He spent time in jail. Just absolute persecution because of that video that was being blamed. And so you're right. Everything's turned upside down. But Robin, let's go back. I don't want to run out of time with you. The mayor of Charlotte is the very same mayor that signed into law this bill that removed barriers in bathrooms and changing rooms. Tell us about that a little bit. And is that not a topic of discussion down there, the irony that Charlotte now should be the scene of all these protests?
It is. I don't know if there's any irony to it, but the mayor, in imposing an ordinance that totally disregards privacy and safety and conventional social norms, is a travesty. Absolutely unnecessary. Should never have happened. It did. She was supported incredibly by the media in Charlotte and Raleigh in the newspapers, like 80% coverage on her side versus 20% for the people who have stood up for marriage being between a man and a woman, and, again, traditional social behavior. So it is a travesty. And unfortunately, the same sort of thinking going forward, she had used that by not seeking and receiving help from the state government with the Highway Patrol and the National Guard as this whole violence scene erupted. And one more thing in the piece, she was given an absolute solution. Charlotte, rescind your ordinance. North Carolina General Assembly will meet and repeal what they did. The votes were there, but then here's the politics. The governor candidate on the Democrat side and one of the local state legislators came in and turned those votes over and left us right where we are. So they had a chance to solve the problem, to stop the bleeding financially and everything else, and they politically refused to do it. That, again, is a travesty and an outrage.
It is an outrage. There's no question about that. I actually mentioned that on Friday. Just so you know, Robin, we're trying to cover this as best we can. And the few minutes that we have left, Pat McCrory is your governor. He has stood so strong on this bathroom issue. And he's in a struggle for this upcoming election because he's tried to protect the women, the little boys, little girls of his state, and taken a huge hit. So what are the polls showing, and what do you expect might happen with this election with his position?
I think that Pat will win. He has stood incredibly strong. He's done the right thing. He's been there in the face of withering fire from friend and foe. I'm extremely proud of him. He's done it. He's done it in the right way. He will win based on what I'm seeing as party chairman, because the people of North Carolina have clearly spoken that the Judeo-Christian tradition in a biblical worldview versus a secular Hollywood-driven worldview is what the core of North Carolina is all about.
Robin, you know,
today, do what's right.
Robin, I'm sure that the black community in North Carolina, for the most part, stands with Governor McCrory on this issue too. I don't think they'd be. Many of them are Christians. They're not going to want bathrooms opened up and be genderless and put their children and women at risk. So how do you think that's going to? I know you don't know, but how do you think that will play out?
That will play out as a potential plus for his campaign. It is up to us, the North Carolina Party, as we work to precipitate and to create a large voter turnout to make sure that we're listening to the black community and every other community, but at the same time applying the truth in liberal doses to what the Democrats have done recently and over the years, which is anti-family, anti-marriage, and anti-traditional. We got to recapture the culture. That's part of our message, and it is sinking in.
Robin, thank you. I totally agree, and all eyes are on North Carolina. And when men do what's right, like Governor McCrory has done, we just can't let them be defeated. We cannot, because it'll set a precedent, and the rest will crumble. I just think all eyes are on North Carolina, and so we hope that you will act accordingly. Robin Hayes, chairman of the Republican Party in North Carolina. Robin, thanks for making time for us this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Morals and character do matter in free enterprise and in our families.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Art is a learned discipline, and teaching that to children can be fun and easy with DVD collections by artist Barry Stebbing.
It looks kind of like a beautiful sunset sky. See all those colors coming off your brush?
Learn the fundamentals of painting and drawing with a teacher-friendly curriculum.
You don't have to outline everything in your drawings, especially when you do flowers and leaves. You let them breathe and you let light come into them.
Start your DVD collection by Barry Stebbing at afastore.net.
The isolation of Israel, the insurgency of ISIS, the resurrection of Russia. Are these current events a sign of a coming rapture and tribulation foretold in the Bible? Based on his new book, people are asking, is this the end? Signs of God's providence in a disturbing new world. Dr. David Jeremiah explores 10 critical issues facing our world and helps us find hopeful answers for an uncertain future. It all starts October 3rd, right here on this good station.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Israel in March, March 9 through the 17th. We'll be going to the land of the Bible, the Holy Land. We'll be seeing so many places every day. The days are just full of things you've read about in the Bible. And one of the things that I enjoy about our trip is wearing people out. And we'll be wearing folks out during our trip of Israel, because I know that when folks pay to go to Israel, they want to see it all, and we'll be seeing it all, including Bethlehem, Jericho, Jerusalem, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, Nazareth, and much, much more. Won't you join us on this special tour of Israel in March? For more information, just call us, and we'll send you a brochure at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5, or go on the web at twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Tonight's presidential debate is shaping up to be as closely watched as the Super Bowl. Let's hope that's not because the public expects it to just be another sporting event, say, a big-time political cage match. The truth is, we really need the American people to be getting seriously engaged in a decision that will shape the future of our country and likely most of our lives for years to come. While there will be doubtless some entertaining moments, what's required is an earnest conversation, one that actually exposes the differences between the two candidates and the resulting choice before us. Of particular, and indeed surpassing importance, will be their competing views on the determinants of our national security. How to defeat the global jihad, stop illegal and dangerous immigration, deter our adversaries, and protect our constitutional republic, its sovereignty, and our freedoms. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. And let me just hasten to say that I made a mistake, and I want you to know it was my fault, my poor staff. I don't want them to take the blame. I got my guests mixed up, and my good patient friend Patrick Poole is with us again. The reason I asked Patrick to join us is because I feel like this story amazingly has been neglected. Do you realize, you know, we're talking about the debate tonight, we're talking about what's happened in Charlotte, but in the midst of it all, do you realize that six people were murdered in a mall in Seattle, in the Seattle area on Friday night? Let's listen to the report from KIRO.
This all started Friday night at Cascade Mall in Burlington. At 6:52, a gunman walked through Macy's with a rifle, shooting five people in the makeup section. A little more than 2 hours later, investigators released the first picture of the suspect. As you can see, it was cropped. Cairo 7 obtained the full image minutes later, and that shows the suspect holding a rifle. At 11:21, the fifth victim, a man, died at Harborview Medical Center. Four women were killed at the mall. Then yesterday evening, around 6:30, the suspected gunman was taken into custody. Only Cairo 7's cameras were rolling when he walked into the jail last night.
All right, that's just a little bit of that report. Now we know that the shooter was Arkan Seton. Initially, they said he was Hispanic. They kept saying that over and over again. But he's a Muslim immigrant from Turkey. But we're not sure why he shot and killed six people. I've asked Patrick Poole to join us because Patrick, of course, is an expert on Islamic terrorism. And immediately, of course, that's what goes through our minds. But what do we know about that? So, Patrick, thank you for joining me a second time. I really appreciate your patience this morning.
We got it worked out. Well, Sandy, what we know about this incident in Burlington, Washington, which is about 60 miles north of Seattle, is that this 20-year-old individual, Arkan Seton, went into the Macy's store, killed four women there, including a mother and daughter. The mother was a parole officer, and the mother, the 95-year-old mother, was there along with her. The man who died, they were walking through Macy's after having dinner, and he threw himself over his wife to protect her. And one of the other victims was a 16-year-old cancer survivor. 16 years old, she had already survived cancer, and she gets gunned down in a Macy's store in the mall. So it's just a hugely tragic incident, but I think, Sandy, what this incident shows again is just the knee-jerk reaction of authorities, which I think leads to delegitimizing our political and law enforcement officials, where they immediately rush out and begin making statements, disclaiming that there's any connection to international terrorism. And to be honest, at the time that they came out and said, this has nothing to do with terrorism, they had no idea who the shooter was, and he was a day away from being in custody. So how could they possibly know? And of course, when you had me on last week, we were talking about the New York, New Jersey bombings, where Ahmed Rahami immediately, Mayor de Blasio came out and said, this has no connection to international terror, and now a week later, we find out that this guy had studied at the Taliban madrasa in Pakistan and taken a number of these strange trips, had traveled to Turkey during 2014 when a lot of ISIS fighters were crossing the Turkish border into Syria. So, I mean, time and again. And, of course, you mentioned the fact that this incident in Burlington, Washington has barely gotten any media. But even worse than that, the mass stabbing attack in Boston here late Saturday morning never got any media play. The mass shooting at the University of Illinois hasn't got any play. And Sandy, right now, I mean, as we speak, there's a active shooter situation in Houston right now.
Wow.
So, these incidents continue to get buried, and like the New York, New Jersey bomber, who set off multiple bombs, had multiple bombs, I mean, could have killed hundreds of people, and it barely survives a 72-hour media cycle.
You know, I remember specifically the FBI reporting that they had tracked Aman Rahami's travel. And they didn't see anything suspicious in the places where he went and the things that he did. And now we know, just as you said, we know now he actually studied for 3 weeks at a Pakistani seminary, Islamic education. But I guess, Patrick, that's because the FBI now has scrubbed their materials and they don't recognize that the basic teaching of Islam is Sharia law, which does mean, you know, jihad. And so they just overlook that. He's just a Muslim, just a peaceful Muslim. They can't make that distinction. Don't you think that's the breakdown here?
Well, to be honest, I'm not sure whether it's political correctness or, you know, as Andy McCarthy terms it, willful blindness. But I mean, we're seeing time and again with these incidents that it's a pervasive problem. We saw it after the attacks in Nice, France, where, I mean, you know, virtually everything that the French authorities said in the immediate aftermath of that attack and about the attacker proved out not to be true. You know, they said that he was a lone wolf. Well, it turns out that they've arrested, you know, nearly two dozen people in connection with the attack. They said he was quickly radicalized, and it turned out that he had been planning this attack for months. You know, the same thing with the Orlando shooter. I mean, the first thing that came out of the media was, oh, well, he was a self-loathing gay. Well, the FBI came out, you know, weeks later and said, you know, there's no basis to that. And the media perpetuates this, you know, and with this, you know, see no terrorism, you know, ignore the man behind the curtain. And I saw it here in my own hometown here earlier this year, here in Columbus, Ohio, where, you know, we had a guy who attacked an Israeli restaurant, patrons in this restaurant with a machete, severely injuring several of them, was later killed in a confrontation with police about a half hour later, shouting Allahu Akbar. Again, he went in and identified it as an Israeli-owned restaurant. And I, you know, it barely made a blip on the daily media news cycle. So we've got serious problems with how our elected officials and with our media are handling these situations. It's more propaganda,
yes,
than it is news reporting.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they leave out things like their names. Whether they're Muslim or not, they leave out their country. They'll say the suspect, or in the case of like Washington State on Friday night, they'll say somebody reported he looked Hispanic. So they'll jump on that and multiply it. And then as quickly as they jump on it and try to mislead, then they shut it down and they stop talking about it at all.
Absolutely. And in this case in Washington over the weekend, where the authorities came out and said that, you know, the suspect was Hispanic, and then the video images from the CCTV camera at the Macy's came out, and a lot of people were like, he doesn't look Hispanic, he looks, you know, more Middle Eastern. And then you had a lot of the people in the media, I was watching it in real time on Twitter, where they were just shouting people down and saying that it was racist. And when it turned out that, yes, indeed, you know, it was a, you know, a Muslim from Turkey, you know, born in Adana, Turkey, and a legal permanent resident here in the U.S., an immigrant, you know, there was no apologies for trying to shut down people who were, you know, making comments based on what they were seeing in front of them. So, yeah, if I were a member of the Hispanic community, I would have been outraged by law enforcement officials coming out and saying that.
And we should, this may be one of the few cases, really, honestly, few cases where a Muslim person committing mass murder in the United States wasn't doing as an act of terror. We don't know if Arkan Seton from Turkey, and by the way, Turkey's been radicalized under Erdogan. They're not a full bore, but they are moving in that direction. And so don't think for a minute that, you know, Turkey trying to achieve this its status in Western culture has sort of been turned back. And there are a lot of Islamists coming out of Turkey. But we don't really know yet anything. Do we know anything yet? I haven't read anything. Do you have information about him that we should know?
Well, in terms of his motive, there's nothing really come out. You know, I've been through his social media. You know, to be honest, it kind of looks like it was very, you know, teenage kind of standard, a lot of Xbox and football and things of that sort. Nothing that immediately jumped out, and it remains to be seen. There is some indication that he had a lot of family trouble. And, of course, a judge had ordered him to stay away from firearms, which, you know, clearly, you know, he violated. He had had some incidents of violence here within the past several months, et cetera. So again, he was on law enforcement radar, and, you know, enough that the judge had prohibited him from having firearms. And, you know, but in terms of his motive, remains to be seen. The police have come out and said that he had no connection to anyone that was killed at the Macy's department store. So,
yeah.
You know, we'll just wait and see. But time and again, when we have a mountain of evidence in terms, you know, like last week when I spoke with you, you know, with the New York, New Jersey bomber, his drill clearly identified him as someone who was in line with the Islamic State. And, you know, yet you had these law enforcement officials and politicians like Mayor de Blasio and a lot of the media scratching their heads saying, well, you know, we don't know his motive, when he had literally written his motive down in journal that he had on him when he was shot and captured.
You know what else, too? Patrick, Mayor de Blasio and the police chief, whose name I can't recall, also both made statements something to the effect that, well, you know, this is the age in which we're living. This is the new norm, you know, it's like you've got to go on. And I know the president made some statement about how brave we are and how we'll not let it stop us. We will not let this stop us. But here's the thing. They expect us to act as though nothing's going on, like people that are just clueless and innocent and just keep letting, you know, our own people be killed and not get nothing to see, nothing to get upset about. It's just normal that six people or five people were killed in the mall in Burlington, Washington on a Friday night, and that the week before there was, you know, all this trouble in Minnesota and New York and New Jersey. It's amazing how casually we are greeting, our officials are greeting this kind of information. Last word from you, Patrick.
Absolutely, and on your program, a number of times I've talked about the problem of known wolf, where I've identified 10 of these domestic terrorists during the Obama administration who were already known to law enforcement when they committed their terrorist attack. So, we've got serious problems, and the continuing pushing propaganda in these incidents like this are just completely discrediting our political and law enforcement officials.
And I guess most of all, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it, Patrick, this morning, I don't want us to get to the place where five people were slaughtered, and it's like yawn, where the week before that, all of these other people were killed and injured, and where right now, as you said, even as we speak, there seems to be something happening in Houston. I don't want it to become business as usual. I want us, our hearts to be broken each time, and I want us to do something about it. And so I appreciate all your good writing. By the way, Michael Mukasey quoted you, I think, in an interview yesterday, which I thought was, I thought you'd like to hear that. I thought he had really good resources.
Good, thank you.
Patrick Poole, thank you. It's always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you really soon.
Okay.
All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning, and please let's pray for those people that just lost their family members. Pray for the people of Charlotte on both sides, the families of the man that was killed, the policeman, the police chief. This is a time of great grief for many people in our country, and we just can't let our hearts be hardened or callous about it. We must do something. Meanwhile, all eyes are on this debate tonight, and this really is one of the many reasons why this debate is so important. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.